Welcome to Marvelicious Toys, hosted by Justin and his amazing friends, Arnie and Marjorie. We bring you news and reviews of Marvel toys, statues, and more, because not all Marvel collections can be bagged and boarded. They're not just toys, they're Marvelicious.
Hello and welcome to Marvelicious Toys, issue number 45. This is Marjorie.
This is Arnie.
And this is Justin.
And you know how with comics, a month passes, 2 months pass, and you wonder where the next issue is? We have the opposite problem. We's a back.
With some breaking news. Beep, 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 beep.
We couldn't believe it, but so much has happened since we recorded our last show. We're actually recording this show on July 1st, the day our last show came out, but it takes a little while to get these podcasts edited and enhanced, so there's a bit of a lag time if you ever wonder why things aren't quite so breaking, but there's a lot of stuff going on we couldn't wait till Comic-Con to tell you about, so let's start with...
The Spectacular Store Report!
So I'm sleeping yesterday morning, Saturday, my day off, and it's the only day that I ever really get a chance to sleep any longer than like 9 a.m. And I wake up to my phone freaking out, and there's messages from Arnie saying that he's finding Marvel Legends variants. I'm like, wait, what?
Well, that's a good thing to wake up to.
It is.
Now, in my own defense, it was probably 9:30 in the morning or so. And that was important news.
I was going to say, most people are pretty much up by then, though, Justin.
Well, I might not have been, except Marjorie's car's air conditioning broke.
My brand new car, by the way. Brand new car, no air conditioning.
You don't need air conditioning. It's only 110 degrees out right now.
You're right. Totally first world problem.
She bought it down in St. Louis, so we had to drive it down to St. Louis with no air to get a loaner car while they fix it. And because, again, with no air, and it was over 100 degrees Saturday, we left at about 7 a.m. So we were up real early on Saturday.
But still, most people are up and moving before 9 a.m., Justin.
Yeah, most people. But when you have kids, sometimes you have to take the opportunities to sleep when they're there.
Marvelicious Toys. We buy more toys before you wake up than most people do all day.
Sadly true.
But I figured if we're going to St. Louis, I was going to make a shopping trip out of it.
Because that's what he does.
Well, I had read online that the non-variant figures were showing up both at Targets and at Toys R Us's. And to us, these are the variants because we haven't seen them. But these are the ones that are on the card. So technically, because Dave Vonner told us way back at New York Comic Con last year, the variants ship first. These are the non-variant figures. These are the ones that theoretically will be more common, but aren't.
Right. But the way they shipped, they feel way more like variants than non-variants.
And I'd seen them showing up. I ordered a Madam Mask at ToysRUs.com, but who knows if it'll be Madam Mask or Madam Hydra that actually shows up at my door. It's not the first time I've wondered which strange madam was going to show up at my door.
Yeah, with any online retailer outside of, you know, going to eBay and seeing actual pictures of the item, all of these variants and non-variant Marvel Legends are going to be very hard to know what's going to show up on your doorstep when ordering. Because retailers don't know. I mean, we're having a hard enough time keeping track of them. I can't imagine the online guy for Toys R Us cares one way or the other. Just, it's a product number to them.
But I was just playing to hit stores willy-nilly, but Marjorie had a grand idea.
Well, it's not a grand idea. I've used it before, but for some reason it didn't sink in Arnie's head. I suggested he use the Target app since he had the DPCI for these toys. And I said, well, it shows what's in stock.
Now, the DPCI number, for those who don't know, it's like a UPC symbol. It's specific to Target stores. It's their internal stock-keeping number. And for the Marvel Legends, and this is Wave 1, Wave 2, variants, all of it, it's 087-06-2403. But what was helpful for me is that, at least where I live, there's no Marvel Legends. So if I could find stores that had any, the odds are it was new shipments and thus new figures. And it's actually gotten better since the last time I used the app. Instead of just saying yes or no, it says no stock, in stock or, in many cases, low stock. And if I saw low stock, well, I kind of thought that might be the one Iron Man figure that's just laying there. It only does a range of about 20 miles, so we just kept heading west. I'd see one that says in stock. Oh, Marjorie, it's just 10 more miles west. 10 more miles. Oh, Marjorie, there's another one. It's just 10 more miles further away from where we live.
We're just 4 short hours away from the biggest ball of yarn on the planet, kids.
I really thought I was going to end up in Kansas. You're right. I did at one point make a Kansas joke because we were out in St. Peter's, and I'm pretty sure we ate at the last sushi restaurant until we get to Kansas City.
I got to tell you, though, I was kind of in that same mindset, Arnie. Like, when you texted, like, hey, check the Target app, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't really tell you much. But Marjorie's logic prevails in this situation because the first Target I went to showed that they had them in stock. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go scan this one claw figure that's sitting here and see if there's any more in the back. And sure enough, they had a case in the back. So I went to one Target to score these, which was way better than driving all the way across Missouri and Kansas.
We actually only went to 3. And at the very first one, I found the masked Doc and Wolverine. And so the scent was picked up. I just missed the rest in the case, right? The second one we went to, the guy wasn't very helpful because they had some on the shelf. He said that his little tricorder said there were 9 in the store and there were 4 on the peg, and that was good enough for him. They were all old things. But what I noticed is I was seeing a lot of those caps. And as you know, since you got a case that was open, caps are 2 per case. So I think I was just missing it. The third one we went to, though, is where I felt like I'd struck gold. Because I didn't know your story, Justin, but there was one Wolverine on the peg, and it was beat up. It was actually wasn't on the peg. The remnants of the card were on the peg. It was on the shelf. And I'm like, okay.
I hate when that happens.
It says in stock. I'm going to go scan this figure because, you know, it's hard to get Target people to pull from in back if there's some on the pegs. But if there's none or if there's one, you're pretty set. And so I had the one figure. I went and got it pulled from the back. Marjorie wasn't with me. I didn't use her boobs to get toys from the back, but I did like the boobs of the girl who got them in the back, which were extremely exposed. I don't know why.
Wow, a Target employee?
Yeah. I mean, I could pretty much see nipple. It was that low.
Wow.
I know.
She might have been out of uniform yesterday.
She was busting out of uniform yesterday. No stud, too. But very helpful girl. Went right in back, got me my case, opened it up, and she's pulling them out. You want this one? No. Yes. 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 No. Yes. And that was done.
She had a fairly similar experience, minus the hot chick and nipples. It was a very helpful electronics department worker who saw me with my daughter holding one of these in my hand as I was walking back from the scanner. He's like, is there anything I can help you with? And I was like, you know, as a matter of fact, there is. I just scanned this over there and it said you had more in the back. And he's like, well, are there any more on the shelf? I'm like, this is the only one. He's like, well, let me check. And he did his little thing on his handheld and he said, yeah, it looks like we have some in the back. He's like, how many do you want? I'm like,
all
of them. He's like, I'm like, well, you know, obviously there's different characters in the pack and whatnot. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, well, I'll be right back. So he came back with the box, and this is the first time this has ever happened to me. I mean, there's been plenty of times where people have gone in the back and brought out a case. He starts talking to me about how collectible these are. And I'm thinking, yeah, I know, buddy. We talk about this on our podcast every week. So, I don't need the speech, but anyway.
I'd be afraid that he's leading to the, we limit how many collectible items someone can buy.
Exactly. That's kind of what I was afraid of, too. That's why I didn't give him any attitude. I was just kind of playing like, oh, okay. You know, I was kind of assuming he was thinking I got a kid with me. Maybe we're buying presents for a party or something. I didn't want to get into the whole I collect stuff with this guy. He brought up this new rule for me, which I've never heard before, that he can't hand them directly to me out of the pack. He has to put them on the peg, and then I can take them. So we're standing in the middle of the toy aisle, and he picks one out. He's like, do you want this one? I'm like, yeah. He puts it on the peg, and then I can take it off. Yeah, how about this one? Nope. Puts it on the peg, scoots it back. How about this one? Yep. Puts it on the peg, I take it off. I was like, this has got to be the weirdest little loophole that I've ever had to jump through.
It's like being at a casino. They can't hand you the money. They have to put the money on the table and then you take it.
But I was more than happy to jump through that particular loophole because it was a fresh case and was able to get every one of these variant, non-variants in one stop. So
that guy's probably in back going, I got to find this case. What can I make this do? I'm going to make him wait. I'm going to make him beg like a dog for every treat.
I've never heard that, but it's been years since I worked at Target. I mean, way back when I was in college. So, but I've never heard that or experienced that at any other Target. And there's been plenty of times when I've used the old scanner trick and, oh, it's someone's birthday, blah, blah, blah. I don't mention that the person's 38, not 8. But they sometimes just hand me the whole box and say, here you go. I'm like, yep, I want everyone. And they say, here, just take it. So I don't, that's, maybe he was just being a jerk.
Yeah, it felt like maybe he was one of the people who took his job a little more seriously than others. Because I've had experiences like that in the past, too, where it's just like, yep, here you go. Walk out with the actual shipping case, you know? So, yeah, it was a little bit strange.
But it was such a relief to find these figures because big-time Spider-Man, Dan Slott, writer of Spider-Man, who created the big-time Spider-Man outfit, keeps posting on Twitter that he's trolling eBay to get one but doesn't want to pay $80.
Yikes. I hear ya.
You'd think Casper would comp him one. He only created the dang thing.
Yeah, but if you give him one, where do you stop? Where do you draw the line?
With him. But let's go through these figures because we have been hunting for them so long and hadn't seen them outside of Toy Fair. The first one is the big time Spider-Man in his green and black outfit.
I got to tell you, I was super excited to see him. And I'm real happy to have him, and it's not horrible, but I gotta tell you, the paint job is not as good as we saw on the prototypes. It almost looks like the green for the glow, on the, at least the one I got, looks like it got away from him, and it looks less like a glow, and like he has a dark green upper body with really neon green spider logo on his chest.
I'm so glad. I hate to sound like this, but we all know I have a bad time with getting the figures with bad paint apps, but I was looking at this figure, and I'm like, it looks like crap. And I remember seeing this at New York Comic Con, at Toy Fair. It was a stark black figure with this really cool green on it. Something happened where it's like he put his big time outfit in the big time wash, and it ran big time.
That's the perfect way to describe it. It looks like it ran.
And the worst part is below the knees where there's no green, it's stark black, showing you the color he should be.
Yep. And on his back, too. You know, you turn him around and it looks like he's wearing a tank top.
I was so disappointed because people had asked me on Facebook and on the forums, hey, how does this figure look in person? And I said, it looks freaking great. And now it comes out and the final result is really crappy.
I'm not going to go as far as to say really crappy because given time, our mind will forget what the awesome one looked like and this will just be a guy on the shelf. But yeah, it could have been better. There was so much more potential for this figure to have a better paint job.
He looks like camo Spider-Man. That's why I say crappy. He is not big time Spider-Man to me.
I think if you were going to customize a Tron Spider-Man, this is the one you'd use.
Mm-hmm.
I really think so because he needs some Day-Glo paint on him.
Here's the only thing I hope for, is that we know that sometimes Hasbro's first release of things isn't the greatest, but at San Diego Comic-Con, we need to find someone and see if this figure might be a carryover and a make-good, because they sometimes adjust the paint apps, they sometimes fix things that go wrong with later production runs, because they get the shipment in from China, and then they call up, what the hell did you do? Yeah, we'll sell them anyway.
Yeah, and here's the rub with that one. This is the one in the line, in this wave, that doesn't come with a Build-A-Figure piece. So the more you buy him, you're not getting any closer to having that second Arnim Zola figure.
True, but given that we already have him twice, what are we going to do? Have an Arnim Zola with two left legs?
It would just be nice if he was part of the Build-A-Figure parts. Because right now, with buying these four variants, we have a new body, a new head, and an arm.
Second one is from the Wrecking Crew, Thunderball. He does not have a jacked up paint scheme.
Nope. And this one was a pretty easy one. I mean, this is straight up repaint a pile driver just with a new head. So there's really no room to screw this up because it's yellow boots, yellow belt, yellow neck, and yellow gloves.
Yeah, he went into the Marvel superhero costume shop and said, I want to look like a giant Crayola box.
The Build-A-Costume workshop.
Yeah, it's like Build-A-Bear. You go in, you pick your shoes, your little spandex tights.
I've noticed that one of the heads, the original head that we got for Armzola, has a red eye, and the new one has yellow eye on it. So there's going to be a little bit of a difference there beyond just the face and the torso.
The third one is Madam Mask, the other Madam of Marvel's Madams. And again, it's mostly a repaint with a different head sculpt to show the gold mask. I really thought she might be one of the harder ones to get. She still may be. These are all hard to get. But I'm real happy with her, and, you know, you talk about bad paint lines. I think they gave a real crisp paint line to her mask there.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's the same hair from Madam Hydra, but a completely different face. There is a mask sculpted on there. You can feel the ridge on her forehead. But, yeah, it's, man, I got to tell you, she's got a creepy look on her face, doesn't she?
I think it's the mask.
The mask and the eyes. The eyes are just having, like, this dead stare.
It reminds me of those masks that people wear when they're going to rob something, and it just kind of like blurs your features, like that clear mask they put over.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of what it looks like, because it, like, all her features are just dulled, except for her nose, but her eyes are dead. I agree.
But I think that really works for her, because she's supposed to have that impassive mask, and so I'm real happy. And of course, this comes with the different torso. The regular Armzola torso, what we had before, was the Red Skull torso.
Yep, and this one, once again, it looks like it's faded. Remember how we talked about we thought it was going to be possibly a lenticular in there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, mine looks like it's faded around the edges, like they printed it on a inkjet printer and then water got around the edges.
Mine has the same fade. I took it as just like a glow because it's supposed to be like a television and things. I just thought it was a glow of the broadcast.
Yeah, I can see what they were trying to do, but to my eye, it looks like it got dipped in water. The whole toy got submerged in water and is now damaged.
Are you going to make an Armzola?
I am.
We need to.
Yeah.
Because I have a Madam coming from Toys R Us, which means I have an extra Armzola chest. So I can have still only one Armzola, but I can make him either Armzola, Red Skullzola, or Armzola.
You're going to end up with a whole lot of Drax figures, I think, just to make this happen.
Not happening. I passed on him yesterday. Finally, the fourth figure, Dokken, the Dark Wolverine. I don't have much to say about this figure. It's another Legends-style Wolverine, this time with a nice tribal on his arm.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't had a chance to put him up against my other myriads of Wolverine Legends figures, but this appears to be a new head. Completely new head. It's not like they just took an older one and slapped it on the existing one, so you got that going.
I think Dokken needs to kind of update his wardrobe. I mean, I don't walk around dressing like my father. You don't see me in green leisure suits all the time.
Not all the time.
Just sometimes.
I honestly, if you're going to make him Dark Wolverine, I realize there's the Dark Avengers bit where he wore the mask, but for the character, I like him better with the mohawk.
Yep. Gives him more personality.
But Justin, I was just paying this all forward because what happened to you on Saturday morning happened to me on Thursday night because I'm viewing our own Facebook page and I noticed a post that Jerry had found a new display of Amazing Spider-Man figures. And I start looking at it and going, wait, there's some there I don't have. And there were a new wave of Spider-Man figures that you could pretty much only find at Walmarts that have the store display put out, because we hit several Walmarts. Marjorie finally found one with a store display and was able to pick these up.
Yeah, there were plentiful, so it wasn't like I had to hunt. I just had to find where they'd put out new figures, and I'm guessing because of the movie, it is like a full-on assault. But it was just like, you know how they stick stuff in the middle of the aisles?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they had. Full of figures, like literally full of figures. Tons and tons and tons. Which means these ones you've been on the hunt for are going to be everywhere forever.
Pretty much. Now, I did find these at a Walmart just sitting on the pegs. I haven't seen that display yet.
It's not thrilling. It's just a four-sided thing full of figures and the crap that comes with it. But I don't even know that all of our Walmarts have it out even, or if they even get it.
Only one does.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about this wave, because I sat there and I looked at them for quite a while trying to figure out, beyond the Invisa Shield Lizard, what was new. And there's one Spider-Man that you can look at and like, oh yeah, that's new, because he's got a big bright green spider logo on his chest and kind of a dark grayish blue outfit going on. So he looks new enough. But then yesterday, Arnie and I were talking, and he's like, okay, well, there's four new figures in this wave. I'm like, what? No. I saw two different Spider-Men that I think were new and the Lizard. He's like, no, there's three Spider-Men. I'm like, really? So yeah, there's three new Spider-Men. Two of them look so similar, and none of them are anywhere near the articulation that I enjoy, so I left them all swinging. But I was a little bit tempted by the one with the green spider logo for some reason.
Well, we'll look at these. I mean, the one I'm sure you bought is Invisa Skin Lizard, who is the exact same lizard as before, only he fades to translucent at the tips.
Mm-hmm. And he comes with somewhat, I mean, now take this with a grain of salt, somewhat cooler accessory than the previous one, which was that trap jaw shooting, couldn't figure out how to make it work type of thing. This one comes with a little squirt gun.
Yeah, you fill it with water and squirts.
Okay, I'm wondering why it had this soft area. That's not going to hold much water.
No, but it's a very small figure. It would probably flood. Now, I'm wondering if this is revealing a new lizard power. Obviously, our listeners will have seen Amazing Spider-Man by the time they hear this. We have not. I'm wondering if this is telling us a little something about the lizard we may not know, a power that has not been revealed. No pun intended.
Yeah. Maybe he's going to be chameleon.
And maybe he's going to have a big super soaker.
He's going to squirt people. Don't get lizard squirt on you.
Oh, don't get it in your eye.
Exactly.
He's going to squirt Gwen Stacy all night long.
No.
But Jerry's review of this actually taught me about a variant going on, because he was reviewing this, comparing it to his other lizard figure that he, like I, got in that first wave that shipped. And he was talking about how this lizard had a bigger head and a much better looking head than the other one. And he was talking about buying a spare Invisa lizard to swap the heads. So I had Marjorie, because she was at the store. I said, well, grab me another regular lizard and grab me another Invisa lizard so I can swap the heads. And I get them, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, Jerry, you're freaking crazy. These are the same. I mean, maybe we're talking a millimeter difference, if that. I'm like driving myself nuts, getting confused which is which. And he sends me back photos going, no, these are clearly different. So I went down and pulled out my old open one. Sure enough, in the first waves, we have, going back to Star Wars Vintage with Big Head Han and Small Head Han, we have Big Head Lizard and Small Head Lizard variants going on here. Not with the Invisage one, but with the regular lizard.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's odd.
What a weird thing to fix. I mean, obviously they looked at that and said they needed to adjust it. But instead of doing the closed mouth version, like they've been showing on the back of the cards, they just make it bigger.
Yeah, that's all they did, is it's exactly bigger. There's no difference, it's just larger. Although, I guess the mouth is painted slightly different, but it could just be yours.
Yeah, and without seeing these awesome pictures that you took, Arnie, if there's just one lizard on the pegs, there's no way you're going to be able to look and be like, oh, yep, this is the small head one, or this is the big head version.
Here's the thing, is because I'd stared at the heads for so long, what got me thinking about it is when we were hitting all the targets looking for the legends, I'm looking, I'm like, that head looks tiny now. It looks like the end of Beetlejuice. And so I was able to tell which one looks tiny, because it's smaller basically than the neck on the tiny head one. The big head one is far better. So people may want to be on the lookout if you bought Lizard early to go and find this new variant.
You think the head's not big enough?
Do you like a big head on your lizard?
I think that's kind of a personal question for you guys.
But the other three figures are just more Spider-Men, Spider-Mans, one of which is a straight-up repaint of the one we've had before. This one is Lizard Trap Spider-Man, which would be very easy to get confused with Capture Trap Spider-Man, which was the Ben Reilly Spider-Man who came with a giant claw. This one also comes with a giant claw. It says movie series, and it's still not quite right. He's got the yellow eyes, but he's got a silver Spider-Man on his chest and his back.
Hmm. Well, maybe that's revealing something from the movie, like a lot of outfit changes.
Yeah, he goes through more wardrobe changes than Cher in this movie.
Yeah, that one was an easy pass for me, but
Now, it says movie series. I'm just waiting for him to pull out the big claw that captures the lizard at the climax.
It's very possible. I'm not putting anything past this movie at this point.
The one that you were attracted to, the Dayglow green one, was the one that I looked at and I'm like, whoa, this is ugly. And this is Night Mission Spider-Man, because if you're out at night, you don't want to wear, you know, black to be stealthy or anything. You want to wear, like, glow-in-the-dark color spider.
It's Night Mission, a.k.a. going trick-or-treating Spider-Man. See, it's safety first. You need to have the reflective spider logo so you don't get hit by a car.
I totally love his suction cup. It is the lamest thing other than when it acts as a suction cup, although it should be clear and not weirdly pee yellow. It is. It's like he's peeing.
Peeing Gatorade.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, see, I couldn't tell in the package that the accessory is his arm, so I'm really glad I didn't pick this one up. Looks like he's got a gimmick on his back.
It's like he's wearing a backpack, which Spider-Man is wont to do at times.
But not when he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, at times. Where do you think he puts his Peter Parker clothes?
He ditches it, because if you look in the first three movies, he would have it and he'd be changing, and he'd never have the backpack. I always wondered.
In the comic, he sometimes webs up a backpack for himself. But the weirdest thing is, because his arm has the accessory portion to it, it's much bigger than his other arm, so it makes me think he's been bowling a lot. But the accessory, you can pop it off, this little nubbin here, and replace it with a grappling hook as well. So it doesn't have to be a suction cup at all times, but at all times he has something protruding from his arm.
That looks like he got shot and it just splayed out.
The other problem is it's very tense, so it always just pulls itself back in. You can't display this figure hanging with this rope extended. It's just, there's no way to release some slack.
Boo.
The final Spider-Man is the funniest, because this is crazy, I'm afraid aliens are coming after me, so I'm wrapping myself in tinfoil Spider-Man.
What is up? No, he got really bored and had one of those iridescent Sharpie markers. This is awful. What's the point of this?
He's Missile Attack Spider-Man. He comes with a glider, which I think it might be supposed to look like a spider, but it looks like a giant insect. It reminds me of an Insecticon.
Yeah, total Insecticon.
That is bizarre. What, does he ride it?
Yeah, he rides it like a skateboard, or he puts his feet in the little stirrups.
Yeah, he rides it like Goblin rides his glider.
Well, this is just ridiculous. I'm sorry, this is stupid. I can go with a lot of crap, but that, not this.
So, for Amazing Spider-Man completists, hopefully you found these figures last week when the movie came out and everything was on sale.
Yeah, and luckily there's only four new figures in this wave, because the way this line is going, it's only going to get more and more funky.
Now, Marjorie, when we were hitting Targets, found something she'd been hunting for.
I have been. I was finally able to find the Wolverine Pillow Time Pal, which is about a, what, 2.5 foot?
27 inches.
Okay. Big Wolverine. I loves him. He's very cute, isn't he?
He's the best he is at what he does, and what he does is give you some place to rest your head.
And snuggles. He snuggles.
Is he a counterpart to that Captain America pillow you got a while back?
Yes.
And the Spider-Man. And so I finally had to give in. The Iron Man one, the Target app lied to us and led us to a couple Targets. Even after we found the Legends, we were still hitting Targets looking for the Iron Man pillow. Finally, I'm like, you know what? Hey, it's on Amazon for $3 more than retail. Let's just do that.
There you go. I got to tell you, these things always look weird to me.
Oh, it looks completely weird, but it's awesome, and I love it. They scare the crap out of the dogs, too. They do not like that Captain America.
Kind of wish he would have had, like, silver claws, but other than that...
Well, you know, he's got claws.
It's bone claws.
It yes. is.
I really like him. I find his Popeye arms weird, my second Popeye reference of the day, but his arms are a little weird, and he looks like he just smelled something foul.
He does have a frown.
It's a frown and like a wrinkled nose.
He is a pillow, you know. People sometimes muffle.
Loud belches?
Yes, with pillows, so...
And finally, for Spider-Man collectors, when I was looking for these new Spider-Man figures, I found something I didn't even know to look for. Another Squinky set.
Yay!
It's in the box. This is another dispenser, but I think it's far superior to the big Spider-Man head we had before. This is a claw machine.
So you don't have to put your dollars in claw machines anymore. You can just play with this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
And it has a joystick and a button, and it actually is a little tricky to get them in. And so you maneuver your little claw, push the button to drop it down and grab it, and then you drop it out the little hole. So it's a bit of a skill game, and it has enough storage in there that if you keep your squinkies in their little plastic balls, you can fit quite a few squinkies in there.
See, that's a little bit of thinking going on there. Makes it a little more fun.
I don't know that I care for these big squinky accessories. I just like the squinkies.
Well, this came with four squinkies in it, so that's...
You kept this secret from me, by the way.
Yeah, I wanted to surprise you on the show.
That's the repack of the Green Goblin, by the way.
It is a repack. And in fact, they're giving us the same numbers.
Yeah, Doc Ock looks like a repack, too. The Venom's new, isn't he?
I believe the Venom and Spider-Man to be new. I think the Spider-Man is one of the amazing Spider-Mans painted in classic colors.
I think so. But Doc Ock and Green Goblin are definitely repacks. I see where this would actually get pretty old quickly.
Oh, it would? I bought it for the squinkies. It's $19.99 at Target. Of course, you know me and my paint apps, I have to exchange it. Because my Spider-Man's missing an eye.
Of course.
Maybe he got squirted with Lizard's squirt gun. And he just got it shut.
And finally, our podcast enhancer, Barrent, got lucky. Justin, how's it feel to be the co-cooler?
Yeah, I guess I'm your sidekick now. I need a cool name like the Cooler or something, but what would the Cooler sidekick be called?
Freezer Burn?
Ice Pack?
Ice Pack. Freezer Burn. I could go with Ice Cube, but I think that might already be in use. Vanilla Ice. That should be back in public domain at this point, right?
He's got a construction show now.
Ice Cozy.
There you go. That's it.
But he is here to give us a hands-on review of what Justin and I ordered a week ago at an exorbitant price and are waiting to still get in the mail.
Only $11 over retail. Not terrible.
Hello, everyone. It's Barrett, Master Collect-Em-All on the forums, your Marvelicious Toys podcast enhancer, calling in with a small review of a great find that I made at Walmart. You know, my Walmart is usually a wasteland where new figures are very hard to come by because of seemingly very bad distribution and the scalper grandmas that roam my area that are scooping up everything. After listening to the Marvelicious Toys issue number 44, where the crew reviewed the Fantastic Four variant pack with the translucent Invisible Woman, I was gung-ho to hunt for those figures. I already have the Future Foundation pack, but I have talked myself into needing that Invisible Woman translucent figure. She is absolutely amazing. After wasting my time searching in the Star Wars section, I decided to give the Marvel spot a look. I can only imagine what a vagabond feels when wandering the desert to come upon an oasis, because that is exactly how I felt when I came upon this pack. Is it real, or are my eyes playing tricks on me? Sitting there on the shelf was one lone Heroic Age Heroes pack with the Red Hulk, the Iron Man, and a Thor. I snatched the pack up like a hungry dingo in an Australian nursery. Usually I'm a mint in box collector, but when I got back to my office, I ripped that package open as if I was hand on to a tauntaun belly. Let me start off with the Hulk figure. With articulation that includes double-jointed knees, swivel thighs, waist, and wrist, this sculpt is superior to the previous Hulk offerings in the 3¾-inch Marvel Universe line. The Hulk figure is able to stand up straight without the bow-legged gape that plagued the other Hulks. The face sculpt is also superior with the great jutted jaw that really screams Hulk smash. And the red paint that they used is a good blood red color that you would associate with the huge hulking rage monster. It would seem like turning the Hulk red would have been a no-brainer because it fits the character so well. I don't understand what took it so long, but I'm just happy that I got the figure now. A great, great Hulk action figure to add to my 3¾ Hulk collection. Rounding out this pack is the Extremis Armor Iron Man and the Thor with the quote-unquote nose, as I call him. I have passed on these figures in the past, as they have been previously released several times. Although I think the blue paint app on Thor looks to be a little bit different than before, but again, I've never picked them up, so I'd have to have a side-to-side comparison to really be certain. But the Extremis Iron Man looks to be exactly the same as the previous releases. All in all, a good pack. The Red Hulk alone was worth the price of this pack to me, but it's nice to finally own the Iron Man and Thor figures that had been around for a while. So keep your eyes open whilst hunting down figures, my friends. They're out there. Don't be discouraged. There are new toys. Be diligent. Until next time, true collectors, make mine marvelicious toys. Back to you, Marjorie, Justin, and Arnie.
Thank you, Barrett. And with that being out of the store report, let's move on to...
Sales to Astonish!
Since we recorded our last show, a ton of SDCC exclusive news has come out. AFX at shopafx.com opened up their attendee-only pre-orders. I don't know how they made this distinction, but certain things you could order to have delivered at home, which I did.
Yay! That means I'm no longer a mule!
But other things you had to order to pick up at the con and would only be available for non-attendees after the con. I guess the things they thought might actually sell are the things I had to pick up at the con. So I went ahead and placed an order. I got the Bishojo Black Widow. So now all three SDCC Bishojos are accounted for.
Very nice.
I also, Bird in the Hand, ordered the Alpha Flight Minimates. They're a little bit overpriced at $20 for four Minimates. But
you've got a Minimate problem.
I did not buy the Captain Action Italiano figure.
But why?
He's limited to 100 pieces. So if I had, I'd have been one of the few... the not-so-proud, the Captain Italiano owners.
they might know their market. 100 might be just, you know, a few too many, but they might sell out.
If they sell out, though, they're $129 a piece, so they would have made $13,000 on them.
Wow.
Also, coming out at San Diego Comic-Con, Toys R Us, they started this last year with San Diego Comic-Con exclusives, they call them. But what they really are is first available at San Diego Comic-Con and then also available elsewhere.
Yeah, and they weren't very good about explaining that last year, especially with some of the Star Wars exclusives that they had.
Yeah, they were showing up online the day Comic-Con began, but nobody knew why, and then they ended up showing up in stores. So you will be able to find this. It is the X-Factor collector set we talked about last show that has the Red Angel, which I think looks really awesome, a metallic Apocalypse, Mr. Sinister. I think the loser here is Marvel Girl Jean Grey. She kind of, I'm not liking her mask.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of repaints here. Like you said, the Angel is going to be the reason for getting this pack because it's the new body and looks like some pretty kick-ass wings on there. But yeah, the Cyclops and Marvel Girl look like the repaints from that X-Men First Class comic pack that was at Toys R Us not too long ago. I'm probably still sitting there.
The Iceman, I like the face on, but I don't know why he has Clubber Lang's heavyweight belt.
Yeah, I'm not sure about what's going on there either. Yeah, it looks like they might have like a iridescent type of pearly paint going on with that one. Because we have Iceman in a bunch of different versions. We have him translucent. We have him casted in white plastic. It might be kind of cool to have one that's iridescently pearly.
I just like the blue eyes and the blue lips they gave him. I thought that added a lot.
He's cold.
Now, Sideshow released a whole bunch of stuff this past week in the countdown to Comic-Con, probably a week and a half ago for you guys. They are being smart and releasing for pre-order all this stuff because they know once Comic-Con starts, all the sites like ours are going to be flooded with everything and they're going to be drowned out with all the Sideshow, Gentle Giant, Kotobukiya, everything else. So they've just gone ahead and put most of it up already. One thing I know was a big hit with collectors is a really pricey item. It's the life-sized Iron Man Mark VII bust.
Life-size, huh?
It's $800, but... I know two people, thank you to both of you who used our affiliate link when purchasing this. It's helped support the show. And when it's an $800 item, it helps support the show a lot. So thank you.
Yeah. And that one, stuff like that's cool. We've talked about the life-size bust in the past. And, you know, something with like Iron Man is always going to work. So if I had an extra $800 laying around too, I might jump at it.
I know the Mark III has really gone up in value. And there were some paint problems with the Mark III. So a lot of people who wanted it are hesitant. So this is a chance to rectify that with something that's, you know, very close in style. They also put up for sale another premium format. This one's the Scarlet Witch premium format to ship next year in May. And the exclusive version comes with a special spell casting hand.
Ooh, ah.
It's a really nice piece. I think it's going to look great when I see it at Comic-Con. But I was talking to Marjorie about it. She asked if I ordered. I think that to order a premium format that's going to be close to 2 feet tall, it's just got to hit every sweet spot. And I love this design, but it also has to be one of my favorite characters. And Scarlet Witch, I just haven't read enough of her to make her a favorite, but I think they did a great job here. They even, the detail they put on her knees, they gave her realistic and kind of gross looking knees.
Okay. And now I'm worried about my knees.
Are they realistic looking?
I hope so.
They're less gross than Scarlet Witch's.
Well, thank you, I guess. That's what knees look like, Arnie. It's not her knees also that's the problem. It's her the rest of her legs. God, now I'm going to be self-conscious of wearing shorts around you.
And finally, they put up not one, but two more hot toys. On what used to be Avengers Friday, they put up, before Amazing Spider-Man came out, the Amazing Spider-Man hot toy.
Yeah, I'm pretty tempted by that one. I may pull the trigger just yet.
I think, we haven't seen the movie yet. See the movie first.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. It could become very unappealing very quickly. So
I went ahead and I did pull the trigger because I'm all in on movie hot toys. Even if the movie's not very good, some of my favorite hot toys come from not very good movies like Ghost Rider.
And you're a Spider-Man guy at heart.
I did make a big step, though. I contacted Sideshow, and I realized I have 8 hot toys on pre-order now. And I switched them all to FlexPay. Because we're going to talk a little bit about a hot toy in a bit, but FlexPay made it so painless.
Well, with 8 of them, you got to have like a $600 monthly bill going right now.
It's about $250 a month because they are staggered in when they ship. But here's the greatest part about it, is they would be $200 a piece anyway. But hot toys, they like to ship all at once. Red Skull, Gantry Iron Man, the Tron Light Cycle all came on the same boat. So instead of being just $200 a month, if they were to ship once a month, I'd have no payments forever. And then boom, they'd hit me with like $1,600.
Yeah, that'd be pretty harsh.
The other thing that happened with the gantry, which was really nice, is it shipped really late. So I had made most of the payments and it didn't actually turn out to be monthly because they try to bill you the 3, 4, or 5 months leading up to the item's release. If it gets delayed, your payments get delayed. So while I'm technically down for about $200 a month, which is a very soft blow for hot toys, it's also going to be even less over a longer period of time if they miss their shipping dates.
I wonder if you could just do like a hot toys one of every figure club like Brian's Toys does. Just go ahead and take $200 out of my account every month and just make sure whenever one comes out, you send it to me.
That's a really great idea. I think Arnie ought to sign up for that.
I'm pretty much in that. It's called my checking account. I put $200 in every month, and whenever a hot toy comes out, they send it to me.
It's pretty close at this point.
But given that the Black Widow went up, I ordered her. The Sideshow exclusive Captain America went up. I ordered him. The Amazing Spider-Man went up. I ordered him. And next, we've got what? Probably the Mark 7 Iron Man.
Hey, at this point, it might be easier to say which ones you did not order.
And done.
Yep. That's the show, folks.
Yeah, I would think that Iron Man Mark 7 would be coming up next. Because beyond that, it seems like Hulk is going to be the big final Avenger.
Yeah, and they're already releasing teaser images of the Iron Man Mark 7, which means that they've put it in front of the camera. They have the prototype shots ready. They're just only going to tease us with his legs. So I imagine he probably has gone up for order by the time this show is released. But let's talk hot toys. I did get my gantry, and that box was freaking huge. I could not wait to get it downstairs and start putting it together. It was a lot of assembly, a huge, like, 2-foot-long instruction sheet.
Any decals to put on?
No decals. What I really like that they've done is the base of the gantry that has the grid and everything is something you apply, but it's magnetic. And so they have little magnets in the base, and then when you put them on, it's kind of like cheap refrigerator magnets, like business card magnets that you get done real cheap, and it fits right in snugly, and it just magnetically attaches.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Now, you could order the gantry separately. I did order the gantry with the Hot Toys Iron Man Mark IV. I did that because even though I had the Mark IV, I wanted to display it a couple different ways. I've got some Geekbox Hall of Armor, and then I wanted one in the gantry. And I'm glad I did, because this is a slightly different Mark IV, and it's going to drive people nuts.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, that's bad.
How slightly different?
Well, the other Mark IV came with four sets of hands, and it came with a donut box and sunglasses, so you could recreate that scene where he's in the giant donut.
Right. No donut this time?
This Iron Man has no donut box, no sunglasses, and only three pairs of hands. Now, also, this one has some scratches on the armor, and I went online immediately. I'm like, did I get a scratched one? And every photo I've seen of him in the gantry has these scratches in these exact locations. So they're intentional wear. They're intentional damage.
Huh.
But the other Mark IV didn't have that, making me think that perhaps the other Mark IV might actually be the better one to display in the gantry.
Right, because this is kind of where he debuts this suit, if we're thinking about the expo where he shows up with this, right?
And that's what it is. When I bought it, when I saw it at Comic-Con, I was thinking the, oh, let's be honest, you've caught me in worse situations, Iron Man 1 scene. But this is really the Iron Man 2 scene at the expo, which I realized when I opened the box, and there's a backdrop for this of an American flag and some fireworks and some stage lights. So it's to be displayed behind that.
That's kind of cool.
And then the weirdest thing that I can't figure out is the Iron Man Mark IV in the Iron Man box, because if you open it up, there were two separate boxes. One's gantry, one's Iron Man. He comes with dummy.
Huh.
I like dummy.
I like dummy too, but dummy made a whole lot of sense with Mech Test Tony Stark. He doesn't make a whole lot of sense with an Iron Man Mark IV that's supposed to be displayed in a gantry.
Right. Well, yeah, if this is the only hot toy you have, then I don't know what you do with that. I suppose you figure out how you want to display it and either use dummy or the gantry, but if you have a bunch like you, you can pop dummy right next to your Hall of Armor when it comes up.
Well, I mean, the gantry is pretty much the same as the one that is in his office, so you could recreate the office scene instead, too, and have dummy there. They haven't given us you yet, but...
Very true.
The gantry itself is an impressive piece. It comes all disassembled, takes a lot of assembly. It stands about 18 inches tall and about a foot wide. It's a little smaller than memory served, because we saw it almost a full year ago for the first time at Comic-Con. And I don't know, everything at Comic-Con seems bigger.
It does, because I walked down and I'm like, oh, I thought it'd be bigger. It's just not.
Are we still talking about the gantry?
No, we've moved on.
Okay.
Yeah, it does look smaller, so I don't know why.
Even at 18 inches, it feels smaller in person than seen at the con. I would think almost 2 feet seems pretty big.
Well, it's not almost 2 feet at 18 inches. It's a foot and a half. It displays, you know, with the 12-inch figure with a couple inches above and a couple inches below. And it's really the width that feels kind of small. You've got like 7 arms, all in a very tight space. There's a lot of articulation in these arms to bend in different ways, but they keep, like, bumping into each other. Because there were 9 arms, and they all fit in this base. And the base is kind of nice, the way it comes apart. It really is an impressive thing to put together. It's a great display piece. I'm not saying that I'm unsatisfied with it. I just, for some reason, maybe it was the money, I imagined it as huge. And when I got it, it's actually a reasonable shelf size display.
I think it's because at Comic-Con, you're in this huge hall, and then they have these massive display cases, and they just jam it full of everything. So maybe that's why.
It has 4 of the brightest LEDs I've ever seen in my life on it. It's almost blinding. So it has a great, if you're in a dark room, a great display, because Iron Man lights up and the gantry lights up.
So you're blind.
So how long did it take you to put this together? It looks like there's some serious assembly required.
It really was very easy to do. I had to follow the instructions step by step. The Iron Man actually took a lot longer because I wanted to try out his different hands. He has the little detachable flaps in the back for his air flaps. He's got the rotate out chaff from his hips. And there's all these instructions. When doing this, be sure to do it just like this. When removing the forearms, do this or else. I mean, it's like, if I do it wrong, I'm going to raise the dead.
Might.
The gantry was pretty easy. I think I have a broken gantry.
Aww.
because the longest time I spent about 20 minutes where it said lock the piece in place, and I'm looking and there was no tab to lock it in place. And then I looked at the other side and there was a tab, and it was not broken off in the package. I think I have a manufacturing error where I'm missing a tab. But once I gave up on that tab, and I've already sent an email, this is why I say buy from Sideshow. I have had so many Hot Toys arrive, and they have a problem. Hot Toys, I love them, but their manufacturing QA could use a little bit of a ratcheting up.
Man, seems like you have a problem, a slight problem, almost every time.
I know. My War Machine, my Superman, my Gantry. When you get them, you got to open them quick, check them out, get them in front of a camera lens, take detailed photos.
Maybe that's your problem.
Because I noticed the problems.
Yeah, that's when you're looking at it. You wouldn't have noticed some of these without the super duper lens, maybe.
It's when I noticed War Machine's foot, that's for sure. But the bases came assembled. You just stick them in. The magnets, you just slide them on. It actually, that part went together really quickly. I do wish in their copious instructions they'd have started by saying put in AA batteries, because I then had to disassemble it all, turn it over, put in the batteries, and then reassemble it all again. That was a minor frustration. But no, I looked at it at first all disassembled, and I'm like, screw me, I don't want to build a model today. I really didn't feel like intense. Like, just a week ago, I was putting decals on that helicarrier. Now this, I was really frustrated, but it snapped together really easily. It was pain-free.
Well, yeah, I think that just speaks to how highly detailed it is. I mean, you look at it, and it's just visually overwhelming, you know, and to make the comparison to a model kit is very apt, because that's what it looks like, especially in the pictures of it still in its bubble shell there. It looks like it could take quite a while, but once it's together, it looks really, really impressive.
And I love the color they used. It's kind of a mustardy yellow that has a little bit of a wash to it.
It's like caterpillar yellow.
Yeah, exactly, like caterpillar tractors.
Yeah.
Yeah, heavy machinery yellow.
Exactly, because it's heavy machinery.
Exactly.
And if they replace it, they won't have to replace the arms. The good thing about going through Sideshow, I don't just promote them because we're an affiliate of theirs. I promote them because I use their support department almost every item they send me. I think I got Ace Ventura for my UPS man. But they make it so that they'll just send me a new base that has the tabs intact, and I'll get to keep my arms and everything so that I don't have to send it back and go, I hope the next one doesn't have something different broken.
Well, I think I'm a little bit jealous of the Gantry. I remember seeing it about a year ago and talking about it and you hemming and hawing over whether or not you were going to get the version with the Iron Man. And now that you finally have it and you had all the fun of taking the pictures, I'm a little jealous. I'm a little jealous.
And the Hot Toy himself, I haven't opened one of the Iron Man ones yet because we moved right when I got a lot of Hot Toys, and they shipped right as I was moving, and we're building a theater room now where I'm going to display them all. They're a little more plasticky than I expected. The War Machine was plasticky as well, but the Mech Tech Tony Stark didn't feel quite so plasticky, but it looks great. I mean, they gave it a great car enamel finish. The light up features are astounding, and the facial likeness, once again, incredible.
It's like I'm holding a little preemie version of Robert Downey Jr.
He's been shrunk.
His eyes are creepily realistic. Like, they're glossy even. I don't like to touch him. I'm worried.
They did hide the arc reactor power button under one of the flaps. The arm buttons are actually right out there in the open, though, right in his armpit.
On his arm or on his torso?
On his bicep.
Yeah, that's where they are on the Mark VI. As well, but his arc light, I want to say, is on his back.
Yeah, this one's arc light is on his back under the flap.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that sounds about right. And since this one has the exchangeable head, do his eyes light up on the regular head?
They do. It's all contained in the regular head, and the neck comes out from the head so that I can use that head in the gantry without having an extra neck around.
Yep. So the switch on that one, I think, should be on the back of his neck.
Right.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of the same usage of wiring and whatnot as they do it on the other Iron Man armor, so
mm-hmm.
I think it might be the same midsection as the Mark VI. Possibly the same legs.
It might be, but it is a very nice piece. And for those who didn't get an Iron Man Mark IV, this was an affordable way to get it if you wanted the gantry as well, because the old Iron Man Mark IV with the donuts and the glasses cost as much now on eBay as I paid for that and the gantry.
Like we always say, hot toys, if you want them, don't hesitate.
I laugh at people who buy toys as an investment, but hot toys are the one exception where I think, yeah, you might be able to put your kid through college on that if this Avengers hype keeps up.
Especially since they don't make very many, and they're just at the right price. They're high end, but not like super duper high end.
Mm-hmm. They're affordable for those who collect high end stuff without being so high that you just walk away, with the exception of like an Ironmonger or something.
Yeah.
Now, finally, in Sales to Astonish, one of our listeners, Mitchell, did send me an astonishing sale at Target.com.
Can I borrow $12?
Hell, I'll buy it for you guys if you guys wear it.
I'd wear it at Comic-Con.
All right, I'm buying it.
We were talking about Tony Stark facial hair.
Oh, brother, what is going on here?
It's for Halloween.
It's in stock online at Target for $12. It's a mustache and goatee. And a guy who looks strangely like Darth Cheddar from our forums.
He does look like Darth Cheddar, doesn't he?
You know what's cracking me up about this picture of this model? It looks like he shaved a goatee so he could model this fake goatee. Like he had a goatee on that morning. And it's like, oh, I'm going to have to shave today.
I'm curious how far down the chin it goes because of the picture. It's hard to tell if it goes under the neck.
Yeah, it looks like it wraps.
You guys, don't buy it at Target. You need to buy it at Toys R Us where it's only
$8.99. Okay.
And if you're buying something anywhere, it's going to ship free with orders over $75. So maybe that's the item you need to get over that $75.
I don't know if I would enjoy Tony Stark facial hair as much as I enjoy my spider spud.
Just don't get the two mixed up.
And in our final segment today,
this just in, news from the web.
We posted some pictures on our site of the Diamond Select Amazing Spider-Man and Lizard figures. And on the back, it talked about a maskless variant. And people on Facebook were like, where's the maskless variant come from? Well, Diamond revealed the information that there are actually two more Amazing Spider-Man Select figures coming. A maskless Amazing Spider-Man and a metallic paint Amazing Spider-Man, both of which will be at Disney stores exclusively in early July.
Huh.
I did pick up this Spider-Man and this Lizard. The Spider-Man, we'd said many times on this show that the lines just looked too thick and didn't look quite right when we saw the pictures. In person, it actually doesn't look so bad. And it's so poseable and it comes with a wall that he can stick against. I like the Spider-Man. I love the Lizard. The Lizard's amazing with all the articulation and the size of him. I want to see the movie, but he may be a really good to scale with a 6-inch Spider-Man Lizard.
I love how you guys are justifying everything and quantifying everything. Well, we got to see the movie. Got to see the movie.
It's true. It's true. I don't collect any Punisher stuff because of that. You know, I'll get Punishers if they come out in the 3 3/4 inch line, but I'm not going to get a Punisher hot toy. Arnie, are you getting a Punisher hot toy?
I would definitely get the Dolph Lundgren one for humor. I would probably get the Thomas Jane one, first of all, because, well, he starred in Hung and he could please the hot toy Black Widow. And second of all, because I enjoyed that movie.
There's a reason why he starred in Hung.
Well, then by that rationale, you should just go ahead and get the maskless Diamond Select Spider-Man because you liked the Social Network, right?
Well, here's the thing. The face on the maskless Spider-Man doesn't really look at all like Andrew Garfield.
It kind of does. Kind of does. I mean, I can see what they're going for.
It looks like Peter Parker, but it doesn't look like Andrew Garfield. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They tried.
They tried. But yeah, I don't feel like he was ripped off in billions of Facebook dollars. The metallic variant one, I'll have to see it in person to make a decision. I do like the Spider-Man on the wall. I don't know that I need him shiny.
Yeah.
If they did a different blue, I'd be very tempted because I'm not a huge fan of the blue. If they went with like a darker blue or a richer blue, that might be a little better.
Yeah, that's the blue is what's throwing me on the Spider-Man figure. I'm all in for that Lizard figure. He looks awesome. I'm going to go pick him up at my comic book shop this week. But the blue on that Spider-Man just seems too light.
Well, they also reshipped the Iron Man with the removable mask. Now, this was previously a Borders exclusive from the Iron Man 2 line. He goes for over $120 on Amazon now, but they have now put him in Avengers packaging with Borders no longer around. I guess nobody could complain, hey, that was our exclusive.
Yeah, they really can't.
And so it's the same figure in a new package, but none of my stores have gotten him in. I'm hoping the Toy Man Toy Show's in a few days. I'm hoping that we will be able to get him there. But I did pick up the Hulk and love that figure too.
Oh yeah. That is one awesome Hulk. And you know what? You look at him next to the Marvel Legends one that we just talked about, and there are differences between two of them that you just can't really put your finger on what's the major difference here and there, but they look different enough, but yet both of them feel like a good representation of the character in the movie. But I think the Marvel Select one beats it out by a little bit just because of the face sculpt.
Yeah, I really like the face sculpt on it. I like the details that they gave it there. It's a really cool figure. The Hawkeye came out a while back. I haven't seen it in person yet, but my comic shop guy accidentally ordered 7, which is more than a case. And so he's offering
more than anyone would ever buy.
Yeah, he's offering me a great deal on him if just to try to unload him. So I may end up with a Hawkeye to go with the Hulk.
Anything under $15 you can't say no to.
And finally this week, I've got a chance to see new Bear Bricks. We've talked about Bear Bricks before. There's a whole set of Amazing Spider-Man and Avengers Bear Bricks coming out. I'm hoping we get to find them at the con as they are not regularly sold in the U.S. The tiny ones go for $20 to $30 on eBay right now. The 400% ones that are about a foot tall go for around $120 to $150.
Okay, but we're buying them. I love Bear Bricks and Kubricks.
Yes, we will buy them no matter what they cost.
Okay.
Because you want them.
And I
want
to point out that while Arnie was looking at the Avengers Bear Bricks, he saw this Spider-Man in Venom, the Kubricks, that were 400%. He's like, hey, we should buy these. They're kind of cool. 2 years ago, I tried to buy those for him for our wedding anniversary, but I ran it by him first. He's like, no, I don't like those. They're not cool. And now he wants them.
What happened is she planted a bug 2 years ago. She planted a seed. It grew into a weed.
You've also come a long way into the Marvel field since 2 years ago. 2 years ago, you were just kind of dabbling around the edges. Now you're all in on Hot Toys and all the way down from there.
That's true.
2 years ago, it all fit in the Marvelicious arcade. Now I'm getting the Marvelicious theater, the Marvelicious studios.
Kitchen, you know.
Speaking of being all in, over at Now Playing, we were all in. You'll be able to hear, by the time you hear this show, our review of The Amazing Spider-Man. So while as I'm recording this, I haven't seen it, head over to NowPlayingPodcast.com where Stuart, Jacob, and I have seen it and hear our thoughts on that, as well as every other Spider-Man movie. And I'm going to be finishing off my look at movie novelizations here, talking about the last Spider-Man novel, Spider-Man 3 by Peter David. If you heard my review of the movie Spider-Man 3 at NowPlayingPodcast.com, you know I think that movie is a bit of a misfire. So much is going on, the villains are given even shorter shrift than they were in the previous two Spider-Man films, and so much that happens in the movie is just coincidence and happenstance, rather than character-driven cause and effect. But the movie was big, running nearly 2.5 hours. It was also a bit of a problematic production. Things were being changed right up until the end, especially regarding the film's climactic final battle. It had originally been Gwen Stacy that Venom and Sandman had held hostage for Spider-Man to save, and it was later changed by Raimi to Mary Jane captured in the cab. So when I went to Peter David's novelization of Spider-Man 3, I honestly had no idea what to expect. I know movie novelizations are often based on early scripts, sometimes very early. Some novelizations I've read, such as Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or Nightmare on Elm Street 5, as well as others, they bear almost no resemblance at all to the final films they were based on because they were based on drafts far earlier than even the shooting script. With so many changes in Spider-Man 3, how much did the script David was given to adapt resemble the final product of the film? Would it be Gwen Stacy held hostage at the end or Mary Jane, It was all I could do to not skip ahead to find out the answer to that one. And more, while David's previous movie novelizations I've reviewed here on Marvelicious Toys have always been loyal to a fault to the movie script, David has also always seen the gaps in logic for character actions and done something to try to fill those in. Well, Spider-Man 3 practically has Galactus-sized plot holes. So could or would David tweak things and show how just a couple minor changes could have saved Spider-Man 3? Having now read this novelization, I can say the answers are yes. The book was based on an earlier draft of the script, but yet one that was very close to the final shooting script. And yes, David does help fill the plot holes in the movie as best he can, but no. While all these things improve upon the Spider-Man 3 story and characters, they still don't save this mess of a script. They just clean it up a little. David's novel is paced almost identically to the final film. Venom is introduced in the third act, and so much of the second act is spent with Peter in the black suit acting like a jerk, be it pushing Eddie Brock into walls or humiliating Mary Jane at the jazz club. And the first act is pretty much all about Peter and Mary Jane. While the major stuff is the same, Spider-Man 3's devil is in the details, and the way David writes those details does make things considerably better. In the film, Peter Parker is portrayed as a pompous ass. He's strutting through the city, saying, "They love me," and unwilling to listen to Mary Jane's problems without minimizing them, saying they're less than what he suffers as Spider-Man. But in the book, it's a different story. David gives us insight into Peter's thoughts, and we see that Peter is really trying still to be a good guy, a hero, a model boyfriend, an A student. Most everything he does comes from a good place. As David writes it, when Peter responds to Mary Jane's bad reviews with Tales of Spider-Man, it's coming from Peter really trying to assure Mary Jane everything will be okay. David writes it that Peter isn't self-centered, but that he's a guy in a relationship with a girl, and guys and girls think very differently. But Peter does realize he has relationship troubles, and he wants to marry MJ as a way to rectify them, but he doesn't realize how bad things are. With all the sniping and fighting with his girlfriend, Peter's starting to feel a little resentment and frustration. That, and he's giving his best and finding out it just isn't enough. In David's tellings, the relationship problems fall squarely on the shoulder of Mary Jane, and Mary Jane knows it. From the first pages of the novel, Mary Jane realizes that she's too selfish to be in a relationship with a hero. She wants the man to be there with her, not there for the city. When he needs him, but police sirens are wailing, she wants a boyfriend that will stay with her and not feel the responsibility to go rescue those in need. And we get an insight into Mary Jane's thoughts, and she realizes this is a deep character flaw. But, in short, she's self-centered and demanding. She doesn't communicate any of this to Peter. Instead, she keeps it all bottled up, and from the first pages of the book, she's already thinking about breaking up with Peter. She says he's not there for her, but the way David writes it, only a sycophantic personal assistant could fulfill Mary Jane's emotional needs. She comes off here as very unsympathetic, and by contrast, that makes Peter far more sympathetic. Think of the old trope in TV and films of the meek, soft-spoken husband dominated by the loud, brazen wife. And you see, that's a road Peter's headed down in this book. So from the first pages, you really want to see Peter stand up for himself and get a woman who's worthy of a hero instead of selfish, jerky Mary Jane. Now understand, I love Mary Jane in the comics. One More Day still stings. I have the Mary Jane action figures from both Toy Biz and Hasbro. And I love that Dan Slott keeps Mary Jane and Peter in a flirty relationship. And don't even get me started about how much I like the Mary Jane cover of Amazing Spider-Man 671. So, I'm not a Mary Jane hater, but her portrayal in the movies is really bad, and here David magnifies all of the cinematic universe's Mary Jane 100 times, making her truthfully unlikable. We, the reader, are completely on Peter's side, even at the dinner where he plans to propose. Peter does bring up Spider-Man, and Mary Jane does storm off, but Peter has more to say. The right things that Mary Jane wanted to hear, but Mary Jane won't let him speak. She won't let him get a word in edgewise. In the movie, as portrayed by Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, it seems both parties are at fault for the relationship breakdown. In David's book, it's Mary Jane's fault. Peter does stand up for himself a little bit, though. At the ceremony where Spider-Man gets the key to the city, Peter is resenting Mary Jane a bit and undecided if Spider-Man should show up at the ceremony or not. But as the ceremony is getting ready to begin, Peter's talking to Gwen Stacy, and he makes up his mind in this passage, told entirely in Peter's thoughts.
Okay, admit it. Admit your darker feelings to yourself, at least. The way that Mary Jane was looking at you so accusingly, so full of hurt the other day. You were trying your best, honest to God you were, but it wasn't enough. There are some days when you just get fed up with the notion that your best doesn't measure up. So here's Gwen Stacy, and all she has to do is mention Spider-Man, and her eyes just light up with gratitude and excitement. And don't you frankly deserve some of this? After all these years, finally being appreciated for everything you have to offer, aren't you finally getting your due? And what the hell's wrong with being pleased about it and feeling entitled to? He shook himself out of his reverie. Mary Jane is a constant negative in Peter's life in this book, and it's in fact Mary Jane that drives Peter to wear the black suit. Let me explain. In the book, the black suit, which we will call Venom as the comics do, even though he's not really named that until he takes over Eddie Brock, it does land in a meteorite and does hitch a ride to Peter's house and does stay in a closet for a while. It's all as equally unlikely as it is in the movie, but David puts a different spin on it. Earth is under an alien invasion. Truthfully, that is what happens. An alien life form comes to Earth with the intent of living here. How it came here, why, never touched on, but the movie just uses space as an excuse to why the suit exists at all. To Peter David, the fact that it's an alien is important and treated as such. Yet, David also does call out the ridiculousness of that happening in this universe, calling it an impossible theory as Peter contemplates it. The suit can sense Peter's emotions, and when Peter's at his most angry after finding out Uncle Ben's killer is still alive and having a fight with Mary Jane, it chooses then to bond with the host. But in the movie, Peter's just kind of fine with that. In the book, Peter's less fine with that, and David explains all. Taking a page from Dr. Octopus in the last book, the Venom symbiote talks to Peter telepathically. When Peter is afraid as to what the suit is, Venom assuages his fears and has a drug-like effect, making Peter feel euphoric. Peter's problems go away on the suit. Raimi described in the commentary for Spider-Man 3 that the Venom suit was to be like drug addiction, but I don't feel that's explicit enough in the final film. David makes it crystal clear in this book that the fear Peter has is washed away by the euphoric aspects of the suit, and the way the suit makes things far more black and white. Normally, Peter Parker is neurotic, wondering what the right thing to do is. The suit just makes it all so much easier. But Peter is, at heart, a scientist, and he eventually overcomes the suit and pulls it off. But the suit fights him, it doesn't want to come off. And no, this isn't the scene in the bell tower. This is in Peter's apartment, the very first time he takes the suit off. And God, how great would that scene have been in the film, making it far more clear when Peter was good Peter and evil Peter instead of just by his bangs. But when Mary Jane breaks up with him, forced to by Harry, but something she'd contemplated so many times anyway, Peter breaks. He goes to the suit to get the euphoric feeling back, like an addict to a drug or an alcoholic to a bottle. He knows it's dangerous, he knows it's not the right thing to do, but he's so torn up by Mary Jane he doesn't care. And the suit then lets him take it off at will. The suit knows, if Peter came back that one time, he'll come back again and again. But the suit has designs of its own, which we'll find out later when it takes over Eddie Brock. But before that, Peter wears the suit despite all the warnings from Dr. Connors, and his own scientific mind as the suit feeds him comforting thoughts. The suit causes him to fight with Harry, and in the book, it's shown as Peter's ultimate act of evil. In the movie, Harry throws a bomb at Peter, Peter kind of whiplashes it back nonchalantly, but in the book, he throws it back and stands there and watches as it explodes on Harry. And then he goes outside and listens, reveling in Harry's screams of pain and anguish. This book takes Peter to the dark places he really needed to go to show how bad the suit was, but the movie didn't dare. After disfiguring Harry, Peter thinks it's open season on his enemies and the next one who hurt him deepest, Mary Jane. He takes Gwen to the jazz club to humiliate MJ, but the scene at the jazz club, as Peter David writes it, is far better than that in the film. Here, after the dance and after Gwen storms out, Peter doesn't just fight one bouncer, but the entire club starts to take Peter on, and he fights them all back, including throwing, not accidentally smacking, but throwing Mary Jane. And in the scene, Mary Jane figures out why Peter would act this way. He's not just hurt. She's able to put two and two together and realizes it's not Peter, but Peter has to be influenced by the black suit. And it's Mary Jane's realization that tells Peter the suit has gone too far, and that's when he goes to the church for contemplation, and eventually, as we see in the movie, pulls the suit off. But But in that church is Eddie Brock. And in the film, Brock, portrayed by Topher Grace, is underdeveloped. But in the book, he's a bit more fleshed out. He's a con artist, he's a conniver, and he's a little bit insane. He's using everybody and everything he can for his own gain. The faked photo of Spider-Man is right in line with the character of Brock portrayed here, a slick talker who doesn't realize that most people find him creepy and slightly pathetic. But the world crumbles around Brock. In the movie, Gwen tells Brock they went on one date, but the book takes this much deeper. Brock stalked Gwen Stacy at a coffee shop until she went out with him on that one date, and she kissed him out of pity, but he built it up in his crazy mind as a relationship. And when he loses his job over the faked photo, he goes to Gwen's house, hoping for one last chance for happiness. He can't have the career of his dreams anymore, but maybe he can still have the girl. But when he gets too aggressive about it, Gwen's dad, Captain George Stacy, gets involved, and that's the breaking point where Eddie goes to church. Now, I've always had a problem with Eddie just happening to be at that church at that time. It's the old Casablanca line. Of all the churches in Manhattan, he walks into this one. But Peter David realizes it's a contrivance and calls it out to be Deus Ex Machina, the God Machine. David literally puts the blame for this on God. David wrote, "It's said by many that God moves in mysterious ways. It was also said by Voltaire that God is a comedian playing to an audience too afraid to laugh. Both explanations and many more besides could explain just why, with all the churches in New York City, both Eddie Brock Jr. and Peter Parker wound up at the same one at exactly the same time." And thus, the Venom suit bonds with Eddie Brock, but it doesn't do so as in the comics to get revenge on Peter for rejecting it. No, in this book, the goo isn't really a symbiote. Its relationship with its host isn't symbiotic, but parasitic. And when bonding with Eddie, it feeds on the man. It's left unknown why it didn't feed equally on Spider-Man. Perhaps it was his power, perhaps it was that Peter never gave himself fully to the suit and Eddie does. But in the end fight, Eddie Brock is dead. The suit ate him. When Peter uses loud noises to separate the suit from Eddie, all the suit is separated from is the skeleton of a corpse. The Venom symbiote, which does name itself Venom later in the book, needs to feed on humans, so it is truly an alien invasion. It is the Blob. And Eddie doesn't die trying to save it from a pumpkin bomb. He's killed inside the suit after bonding with it. To me, this is so much better, so much cleaner, and so much clearer than what we got in the film. Sure, it's not like what you get in the comic, but with so much packed in, we needed a little bit of streamlining in Spider-Man 3. And this course correction of just a couple of degrees gives Eddie a fleshed-out character of an evil person, not just misguided but crazy dangerous, before the goo ever reaches him, and it gives the goo a motivation versus just being a magnifier of personalities. And if Peter David improved upon Eddie Brock, he did so much more for Flint Marko, the Sandman. In the early parts of the novel, Sandman's story is almost identical, down to the stupid scientists who run the experiment knowing the readings are off and blaming a bird. Though David does explain why the experiment's happening at night, it's being done by Quest Engineering, the company the Green Goblin attacked in the first movie, and in an effort to increase security, experiments were being done at random times so no espionage like the Green Goblin's bombs could be planned. But in the film, once transformed, Sandman becomes a non-character. He just shows up for some action scenes, but his sick daughter Penny, forgotten. His estranged wife, forgotten. And at the end of the film, when Eddie Brock is killed, Sandman just gives a speech and blows away. His story has always been a mess, but this novel clears up so much by giving Sandman extra scenes. Stuart and I both asked in our review, what was Sandman doing with the money he was stealing? How was that money helping his daughter? Who was taking it? The answer, shown in this book, is that Penny has an incurable disease, and one doctor, a research scientist, was working on a cure. He wanted to put Penny in drug trials, but the funding was removed. Marko, not being the smartest of individuals, just thinks if he can take money to the doctor, the cure will be instant. But the doctor can't do it. The money's useless, both from the perspective of using illegal funds for scientific research and from the perspective of time. Penny is terminal, and the doctors need years, not days, to fix this disease. Of course, this isn't the answer Flint Marko wants to hear. He's a man who gets what he wants through brute force and intimidation. It's why he's a criminal. He's not a scholar. And so he threatens and intimidates the doctor and continues to steal more money. But that it's for his daughter is driven home, both through that doctor scene and another scene where Marco goes to watch his wife and daughter at a playground and forms a sandcastle for his daughter. And Marco's also shown to be worried about other people. He's not a homicidal maniac. When cops shoot at him, he tries to stop the bullets lest other people be hurt. This goes a long way to showing him as an accidental criminal, an accidental murderer, instead of just a cold-blooded killer who lamely says, "I'm sorry, I've done bad things," at the end. But Spider-Man does almost kill Sandman with the water. Sandman is surprised he was able to recover from the muddy sludge he became when Spider-Man loosed forth the torrent in the sewer. So when Venom comes along and offers him a deal, and subtly threatens Marco's daughter beside, Marco knows the only way he can ensure he's not arrested or killed is to stop Spider-Man. But Marco is only in this for his daughter, and his daughter comes back at the climax. I said when this movie came out, you can go back to NowPlayingPodcast.com's archives to the review I did opening day of Spider-Man 3 in 2007. I said there Penny needed to return. In this book, she does. When the televised fight between Sandman, Venom, and Spider-Man is airing, it's seen by the doctor who Marco tried to buy off. The doctor knows Sandman's true identity, and so he goes to the police. Specifically, Captain George Stacy, giving that character something worthwhile to do as well. Stacy takes the doctor to the apartment of Marco's ex-wife and tells Penny a hard truth. No one can save her, but she needs to stop her dad from hurting other people. So mid-fight, accompanied by the doctor and Captain Stacy, Penny goes to the construction site to see her father. She's the only one who can get through, and she's accepted her own mortality. It's Penny's compassion that stops the Sandman's attack, and all this happens while Venom and the New Goblin are still going at it. Sandman then has to flee to protect his family from Venom. And while this type of mid-fight pause may kill some of the pacing and the excitement of the fight, it gives Marco what he needed more than money. A character arc. It explains what will happen to Sandman after the movie. In the movie, he just floats away and we wonder what happened. In the book, he chooses to go to prison and serve the time for his crimes. He chooses to do the right thing after being shown the way by his daughter's innocence. We have none of that in the film. And what about the New Goblin? I said Harry was the most fleshed out character in the movie Spider-Man 3, and David does him right here. He's shown from the beginning as haunted by the ghost of his father, and David openly references how this parallels Hamlet. And much happens the same as the film, but after his amnesia, Harry still has flashes of his father, and his memory actually returns before Mary Jane comes over to do the twist. And by the way, Chubby Checker's The Twist was in the original script and in this novel, not a post-production add-on, which I couldn't believe. But Harry gets his memory back, but chooses to stand up and fight against his madness and against his father's ghostly image, and whether that image is in his head or an actual ghost is never fully clear. And it's again Mary Jane, the heart of all bad things in this book, that drives Harry over the edge. Mary Jane, in a moment of weakness, kisses Harry and plays with his emotions and then runs off, and that's when Harry can take no more. Just like Peter running to the black suit, Harry runs to the green one and embraces his evil side and begins a plot to torture and kill Peter. But at the end, Harry's redemption is sweeter. Harry does try to kill Peter and is doubly resentful after Peter throws a bomb in his face and scars him, but Bernard's still really stupid declaration of how Norman Osborn died brings Harry partway back from madness. But Harry still must have the strength of will to stand up to his father, and he does. He overcomes his father's orders, finally breaking free of the shadow of the man who kept him down the entire trilogy, and chooses to go to save Peter. And in the fight, Harry's shown well also. Mary Jane is falling from the taxicab, plummeting to her death, and Harry and Peter are on Harry's sky stick, chasing her. Peter urges Harry to go faster, but Harry fears for his own life, he fears crashing, and in this moment, Harry hates himself for his own weakness, that it isn't in him to throw away his own life to save someone else's. He pulls up, but Spider-Man jumps off the sky stick, risking himself and saving Mary Jane. And this selfless act shows Harry he doesn't really love Mary Jane, and Peter does. And Harry vows not to let his boyhood infatuation ever come between Peter and Mary Jane again. And when Harry dies, killed by Venom, saving Peter, it's Harry overcoming that knowledge that he wouldn't sacrifice himself. He does sacrifice himself to save Peter. And it's here where Harry, who best embodies the message of forgiveness that's in this movie and this book, his dying declaration says he forgives Peter for everything. Now, I think this actually would have come better if it had come before Peter forgave Sandman rather than after. It would have shown Peter the power of forgiveness, and then with Sandman, he'd be paying that forgiveness forward. But it was a nice final note for Harry to end on. Although, one flaw in this book that Peter David does bring up is that Mary Jane doesn't know what's up between Peter and Harry. Now, it's been shown that these three are friends, and Harry's hatred for Spider-Man is no secret. Harry tells the world Spider-Man killed his father. So given this, didn't Mary Jane know that? So when Mary Jane finds out in Spider-Man 2 that Peter is Spider-Man, you'd think one of their first conversations would be, "Hey Tiger, what happened with Harry's dad? Oh, him? He was the Green Goblin who twice tried to kill you. He tried to kill me too and was impaled on his own glider. Oh, okay, don't tell Harry." So when Mary Jane says in the movie and the book, "What's up with you and Harry?" it's as if Mary Jane doesn't know Harry blames Spider-Man for Norman's death. It's a strange thing indeed, but it's a flaw of the original screenplay. David's writing just calls it out a bit more. But if all these major characters are given better roles, so are the minor characters. Gwen Stacy has more to do with the scenes with Eddie Brock, and she also goes to the battle at the end to see her father. She's shown as going out with Peter as a direct reaction to her father accusing her of being around bad people like Brock, and while I do think she'd be better served as the hostage at the end of the story, she's at least given so much more to do. Plus, David explains, she's not really a model, she just took this one modeling gig, lest she be seen as all smart and all beautiful. In the movie, how Mary Jane became the hostage is a mystery. It's explained in the book that the symbiote gave Eddie Peter's powers and his memories. Eddie went through Peter's apartment. He picked Mary Jane as the target, seeing her photo, and then did the cliché movie scene of impersonating a cab driver to take someone hostage. And while it is a cliché, couldn't you so see it happening? Topher Grace turning around, revealed as a cab driver, staring Mary Jane, "Where to, miss?" All these things together really help fill out these characters that were so paper thin on screen. It makes me respect the story and its themes, being far less ham-handed than in the film. I did go to Peter David and ask if these scenes, the new ending, were they his fixes or were they in the script? And the answer shocked me. This was all in the script Peter David was given to adapt. The changes made in production, perhaps because the movie was already too long at 2 hours 20 minutes, were what damned this movie, but the script itself wasn't so bad. Wasn't so bad, but it was still pretty bad. Mary Jane is still really unlikable, a bad turn for a character we've been with for 3 films. Peter is oblivious and not a very active character, more reactive. The suit is still coincidence, and worst, Sandman being Uncle Ben's killer is a fatal flaw of this movie. David even writes it explicitly. If Marco killed Peter's uncle, then nothing Peter did could have stopped that. Had Peter stopped the thief, Uncle Ben would probably still be dead. It erases the entire motif of "with great power comes great responsibility." It's a terrible, terrible creative choice. So even if every fix here had been in the film, my opinion of it would be softened, but I still wouldn't like it. But for the book, for those who want to see a better, if not great, version of Spider-Man 3, I suggest taking it out. Fast-paced, good action, and a good healthy dose of Peter David humor go a long way towards making the book enjoyable, even if David can't quite turn this lemon of a tale into lemonade of a book. And with that, I end my look at Marvel movie novelizations, tying in with Now Playing's reviews. You can hear our review of every single live-action Marvel movie over at NowPlayingPodcast.com.
There's just no salvaging the emo Tobey Maguire in print or on the screen, is there?
It just may not help that I have these images burned into my mind from seeing the movie, so that when I'm reading it, it may be even worse. Well, finally this week, we mentioned the Toy Man Toy Show. Marjorie and I did go to that and recorded a quick report of what we found.
Well, we just finished the Toy Man Toy Show in St. Louis, Missouri.
Not a lot there. I was honestly a little bit disappointed because I went down. I've kind of been on a bit of a Marvel Select kick. I was thinking maybe I could find some of the Marvel Selects at a good price, especially if I bought in bulk. Maybe some Marvel Legends, not just the new ones, but the old ones. Maybe some Marvel Universe figures. I'm still looking for a Thing hand for my Thing that has 2 right hands. None of it, really.
No, I really thought we'd see tons of Spider-Man stuff. Like, everybody'd haul out all the Spider-Man stuff they had laying around, and really there wasn't.
Not much at all. A few posters for the new movie, but by and large, a lot of the stuff we saw last time, there was one person there who had a bunch of Marvel selects, but they were all the newest ones, so the ones that are easy to find didn't feel like getting those. There were very few Legends figures, just the last wave with the Storm and the Psylocke. That was Universe. I may have said Legends. Very few Universe figures, Storm and Psylocke. The Legends, I did see some of the last wave, but they wanted 20 to 30 a figure for them, which is exorbitant. But I did walk away with about 20 new 6-inch scale figures.
Yeah, you did. It was kind of funny because I don't think the guy understood what you were doing at first. He really had to think about it. And then you bought 20 of them. And he gave us a free tote. It's Sterlite, not Rubbermaid, but still he gave us a free tote.
I'm really into the movie figures. And going back, I'm trying to fill out some of those old X-Men figures that I had for about 20 days in 2000 before I returned them to KB Toys. And because I had no place to keep them in my 800 square foot apartment.
And as I recall, you had no job.
I was unemployed.
And that was our bill money.
That was our bill money, the dollar a figure. But I've been wanting to get those back because I think they have some great likenesses. I was spurred on by the Fantastic Four figures I talked about a couple of shows ago. And so I came across this huge stash of X-Men figures from the first X-Men. And I'm talking Mystique and Cyclops and Jean Grey with the melting politician, Professor X, Rogue, Sabretooth, Wolverine. I picked up the Statue of Liberty playset a while back, too, so I wanted some figures to put around it. The guy wanted 10 apiece, and while I think that's a little bit high, knowing that they were on clearance for one apiece, I also know that I may find them cheaper at a future show. If I want to eBay these things, they're going to be a lot more because they're harder to find now in mint-on package and such. He also had a ton of Iron Man 1 6-inch figures and some Fantastic Four figures. He wanted 10 apiece. I asked him if he would do 20 figures for $150, and he had to do some math and realized I was paying more than somebody else that morning who bought 14 for $100, and he agreed.
Yeah, so that was kind of nice, and you sat there and picked out your 20 figures.
So I got all 11 X-Men figures he had. I got a handful of Iron Man figures, and then I picked up a Spider-Man figure that comes with a J. Jonah Jameson punching bag. The punching bag kind of made it amusing.
Yes, but the giant tumor that propels Spider-Man's arms on the back of him makes it amusing as well.
I can swap out the Spidey figure and put a different one punching the bag. I also picked up that Avengers board game that we've been seeing at Target. A guy had a ton of them out front for $5 a piece.
Yeah, and they're still selling for like $25, aren't they?
They had gone on sale. I'd seen them around $15, but for $5, I'd be willing to break it out and play it and see if the game's any fun. We have board game night,
I guess.
We also, while in St. Louis, hit the Disney store, and we'd heard some reports. Diamond had said their exclusive Disney Spider-Man Marvel Select figures were going to be coming out early July. We went in today, and the lady was very apologetic, but said, no, the figures are supposed to come out tomorrow.
I thought she was going to cry because Arnie told her we drove here just for those. And he wasn't being mean. He was just being really nice and talking to her. And I really thought she was going to bust out in tears. And then she just like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then she walked away and came back and said, well, since you drove so far, don't tell anyone, but we can sell it to you now.
So I got the maskless Marvel Select Spider-Man. They did not have the metallic one, so that may be coming in a later wave or a later shipment. They also had a ton of Marvel Universe figures here, and I got a Black Widow on the peg.
Very nice.
And we just wanted to top off. This isn't related to our St. Louis trip here, but Marjorie hit a few Targets since the last time we recorded in the studio and went looking for Marvel Legends.
I did, and I was at Target, and for some reason, the two guys in the toy aisle, the Target employees, asked me if they could help me find anything. I'm like, well, I'm kind of looking for these Marvel 6-inch figures. And the one guy gave me this spiel how they quit carrying them and they phased out the line, blah, blah, blah. And this other guy goes, no, here's 6-inch figures. And he pulled up a 3 3/4-inch figure. And the other guy just looked at him and kind of chuckled. And I said, well, maybe that's what you think 6 inches is. And the other guy laughed hysterically at that.
I can't believe you actually said that to two strangers at a Target.
What? They were employees.
Oh, so that doesn't matter.
That was funny.
It was funny. So you didn't have a 6-inch figure and neither did he.
Exactly.
So that's it from our St. Louis trip back to the studio.
Well, that is our show for this bonus episode. We will be back from Comic-Con next time, we promise.
No more before Comic-Con. You'll just have to wait. So until Comic-Con, true collectors,
make my Marvelicious Toys.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Marvelicious Toys. If you enjoyed this podcast, please help our show by leaving a positive review for the show on iTunes. There's even more Marvelicious content at our website, marvelicioustoys.com. At the site, you can see pictures of the products we discussed, find checklists for Marvel toys, talk and trade with the Marvelicious forums, and much more. It's all at marvelicioustoys.com. We want to hear your thoughts on Marvel collectibles. You can leave reports of your latest toy finds as well as product reviews on our voicemail at 803-MARVEL-4 or email an MP3 or iPhone voice memo to show at marvelicioustoys.com. Marvelicious Toys is produced and edited by Arnie Carvalho. Podcast enhancement by Barrett. Marvelicious website design by Jason. Graphic design by Justin. Announcements by Brock. The Marvelicious theme song, Bam Pow Kablam, is composed by Joe Harrison. See more of Joe's work at www.StarWarsFanWorks.com/Lion's Mouth. If you also like Star Wars collecting is covered weekly at our other podcast, Star Wars Action News, which you can find at SWActionNews.com. Marvel Comics and all that the Marvel Multiverse contains are the intellectual property of Marvel Entertainment Incorporated, a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company, and no infringement is intended. Marvelicious Toys is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2012, all rights reserved.
Did you guys find the, is that your picture on Facebook of the variants on shelf at Target?
Can I hear you?
Arnie, he asked about the variants. Did you get those at Target?
Yes.
Is that your picture on Facebook with them on the shelf?
Yes.
So did you take them over to like the home entertainment section so you could take the picture? There's a chair back there.
I was just walking out of the store and I'm like, I should take a picture before I leave so I can tweet it at lunch. And so I left the toy aisle, and I'm like, well, where am I? Kids bedding.
Nice.
Excuse me.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
That wasn't even that big. That must have been super duper amplified by the microphone.
I think it was, and it sounded very deep.
It had a lot of bass.
Yeah, it did.
I think I'll save that one to test my subwoofers with.
I think what I have to ask the next question. Did you get any on you?
It was seriously not even that big of a belch. It was just kind of like a burp. You guys both reacted like... like I just threw up on myself.
That's kind of how it sounded.
Yeah, it sounded like that.
Are you recording yet?
Yeah. Nice. You'll hear it on the show. It may separate all our bloopers. I'm sure Ben Burt could slow that down and make it sound like a wampa.
And this is Johnson.
Can you say that again? You cut out.
And it sounded like you said Jonathan.
Wow. And this is Jonathan. And this is Justin. Hang on. That was too cheeseball. And this is Justin.
Would you like a third take, mister?
And this is Justin.
And I'm using that one.
Do not.
Thunderball, that's a James Bond movie I had to just watch.
Isn't it also the movie about people in wheelchairs? No, that's Murderball. Close.
Finally, the fourth figure, Dakin, the Dark Wolverine. It's Dakin. I'm listening to
like
this
Like rocking
week-
with Dakin?
Yeah, I know. I'm listening to This Week in Marvel podcast. I'm like, it should be Dakin. No, they pronounce it Dakin. I'm like... Dream Warriors, rock on, okay. You say it's Dakin. You guys work at Marvel, but you must know more than me.
Wow. I've always thought it was Dakin.
I always thought it was Dakin, too, but Dakin. Apparently, he's European, where A is pronounced Ah, Dakin.
Only people could see you when you say that.
Dakin.
Nine Dokken.
You sound like Arnold.
Dokken, the Dark Wolverine.
Dokken, rocking with Dokken.
Hey, can you unplug and plug in?
Okay. Am I back?
Yes.
Okay. He's like, no, there's three Spider-Men. I'm like, really?
Lou Spider-Man, attorney at law.
His other cousin Spider-Man?
Phil Spider-Man.
That's who Katie Holmes retained as an attorney for the Tom Cruise divorce.
Phil Spider-Man.
Is there any site that sucks worse than Hasbro's?
No.
Are our pictures up on our website? I guess I should, again, yeah, look in my own backyard. That's right. Jeff did that really cool cover.
That's right. I always forget to go to our own site.
It's like if your dad owned a hot dog stand, would you never buy hot dogs there?
Maybe. Depends on if I felt like a hot dog that day.
Yeah.
The likeness on the maskless social network. I just watched that movie this morning. It's the funniest thing.
Wow.
The...